Dancers, please. The dance is about to begin.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. Whose world is this? It's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine.
I sip the dumb pee watching Gandhi.
Hey, yo, y'all, what's going on? This is Aaron bringing you episode 128. This is my social life of a black introvert podcast. Hope that you're having a wonderful day wherever you are all around the world. I hope that you are smiling. I hope that you are just enjoying whatever space and place you were in. Y'all, I was in a conversation today talking about the importance of space and place. Like just being satisfied, not content, but being satisfied with where you are, the place that you are, and the space that you are in. I've spent so many of my years being in competition with people, and especially about space and place. I would see other people and wonder or become jealous, like, why am I not where they are? They're taking a vacation this month. They're somewhere overseas, but I'm sitting in my office. I'm sitting at home. Like, why? Why? I've had to really learn how to be appreciative of the space and place that I'm in. I can't be so caught up on social media or so caught up on what I'm not doing, so much so that I'm blind to where I'm at in my current space and place. So I ask you, where are you? What space and place are you? Right now, this very moment. Can you find something in this very moment that you are listening to this podcast, whatever space and place you are at or in or around? Can you find something that you appreciate? It could be something as simple as, yo, you're breathing right now. You're alive right now. The smell of the room. The colors of the wall. The artwork that's around you. The voices, the chatter, the sound of nature, something. Can you find some beauty in the space and place that you are in? Now, let me go ahead and also share this with you. Your space and place may not be perfect. This may not be your dream space and place, but it's your reality. And in order for us to really grasp our dreams, we have to appreciate the reality that we're in. You're breathing. You're beautiful. You have life. You have opportunity. You have the ability and the power to create positive impact in someone else's life. You're walking. You're experiencing. You're hearing. You're seeing. You're feeling. You're being felt. You are here. Or in this case, there. In a space and place that has opportunity for you to grow, evolve, and change. You'll get to where you want to be, but you have to find appreciation in the very spot that you are right now. So just take some time, take a couple seconds, you know, even right now, look around in the space and place in which you are. And honor it. And honoring it, you honor yourself. Y'all, I appreciate the feedback on the last episode, Black Synergy, as we continue to delve into this series called Working While Black. And I really wanted to use that episode as a way to discuss the importance of community and connection. Like, do you know how good it feels to speak to people that understand what you're going through? There's so many challenges that I face in the workplace that I just needed not necessarily a shoulder to cry on, but some eyes to look at me and say, Aaron, I see you. Ears to listen to me say, Aaron, I hear you. And maybe I do need that shoulder to cry on occasionally. Because this experience in working while black, especially in predominantly white workplaces, is isolating. There's a lot of inner turmoil that can happen on a day-to-day basis or that stacks up over the course of years. I've experienced that. Traumatic experiences that you don't know hurt as much as they do. But when you get the chance to come together to laugh, to share, to, spill a little tea is good, occasionally. But to really just build each other up and to recognize the strengths, the power within not only the individual, but within the group. To have those moments of encouragement, those moments are so absolutely necessary. And so, as I encourage you all, I want to encourage myself to have moments of synergy. I call it Black synergy with my Black folks, but I have synergy with white folks. I have synergy with folks in general. Have your moments, create your moments of synergy with people while you're in the workplace. Find your group. Find your folks. Because you'll need those moments to create momentum that will take you to the next level, to the next place, to the next space, to the next room, to the next seat at the table. Those moments create the momentum that you need and that we all need to elevate. If you haven't listened to the last episode, go check it out. Go check out this whole series because we are embarking upon chapter 3 of Working While Black, and I'm excited to have this episode today. This is one of those episodes I think is it's going to be more so of a culmination of my work experience as opposed to just one or two jobs and pulling out tales and stories from just a certain time period in my life. But this one is going to really be more expansive, taking the lessons that I learned at the age of 15 and 16. And combining them with the wisdom and the vision that I have as a 38-year-old currently today. And so this the title of this episode is called Leaving the Coop. Y'all, my first real job was at a chicken place, a fried chicken fast food restaurant. I got the job at 15 and a half, and I was excited to actually earn a paycheck. Like, it was cool getting, money from my father, from my parents for allowance, or from my father for working, with him during the summer, or mowing yards, or, doing little things like that. But I wanted a steady paycheck. I felt like it was time. And about that 15-year-old age, an opportunity presented itself for me to work at the neighborhood chicken place in the hometown that I grew up. Y'all, for those who don't know me, I love chicken. In fact, I love chicken so much. That's one of the reasons why I wanted this job. It was my favorite. Actually, still is. It still is my favorite chicken place to this very day. Every chicken place I've been to gets measured up against this chicken place because I love the chicken that much. But looking back then, like, I was really excited to get a job, to be able to afford some of my shoe habits, some of my clothing habits, to get some of the clothes that I actually want and not just get school clothes at the beginning of the year and Christmas. For those of y'all who don't know, that's what sort of happened, for a lot of us in the 90s. You got school clothes two times a year. Other than that, you better make a stretch or get some hand-me-downs, all right? But with the job, I can buy clothes whenever I wanted to. I can get shoes whenever I wanted to because it was my money. And I was proud to earn some money on my own. I had an interview with the store restaurant manager, and he had previously employed my brother at another fast food restaurant. So I had sort of the in getting the job. And I remember prepping just a bit as a 15-year-old should, and just being nervous sitting there out in the restaurant seats, answering questions about what work experience I did not have. But he seemed to enjoy me. And he treated me with respect throughout my total time and being there. Like, he was absolutely wonderful. And so he told me, he said, you know, I like you, but you have to interview with the general manager before I hire you, which was no problem. You know, I could do that. You know, that's fine. But here's the deal. As a 15-year-old or 16-year-old, I think it's like 15 and a half, I didn't even know what a general manager was. I wasn't aware of position and hierarchy within organizations. I was focused in on the $50 to $60 check I would be making per week. I didn't understand the politics and the levels of leadership and authority. I interviewed with the general manager the following week, and I sat at the exact same table that I did when I interviewed with the manager the week before. And I expected everything to really go according to what had previously happened. The same type of questions, same interview, the same vibe, the same, hey, I like you. You know, let's go ahead and hire you. Y'all, I got something completely different. I interviewed with the general manager, and he asked me a couple standard questions. You know, where are you from? You know, why do you want to work here? And then things took a turn, especially with some of the follow-up questions as he was filling out some paperwork for me. One of the questions was, you know, what's your parents' name? Cool. I know my parents' names. Like, I know that. And I told him my mother's name. And he said, what's your father's name? Oh, you know, that is if you know your father. Y'all, did y'all catch that? That is if you know your father. Listen, I was 15 years old. I was shocked by that question. If I know my father, what are you trying to imply? I understood it quickly. Because I was a black, young black male, the assumption was that I came from a single parent household. The assumption was that my mother had multiple baby fathers, and that if I happen to know my father, that's almost a bonus. But he assumed that I did not know my father. Still, I answered it. Gave him my father's name. Couple more questions go by. He asked me what school I went to. As I was about to tell him the school that I went to, and mind you, the school I went to was within a quarter of a mile from the actual location of the restaurant. He interrupted me and said, oh, you must go to the alternative school for troubled children. Like, why would you assume that? He said, oh, you know, I just thought you did. I corrected him. I told him, no, I go to the local high school. Just as most kids around here do. I mean, we only had like three high schools in the city. Not a lot to choose from. Especially on my side of town. You went to one high school. You went to a couple elementary schools. It wasn't a huge pick. But he was making assumptions based upon the color of my skin. During the same interview, he also thought that I lived at the group home that was on the close to the restaurant, within walking distance of the restaurant. And I was like, no, I don't. I live over in this neighborhood, in which he was also shocked. And even though I answered these jerkish questions, I still got the job. But in sitting there, I knew I was going to have some problems with him because he had problems with me. He completely wrote me into this box of being poor, black, troubled, and not protected by family, friends, or community. And that is a huge deal, because sometimes when some people notice that someone is not protected, they feel as if they can exert any amount of power upon that individual. And because they lack protection, because they lack community, because they lack family, friends, then there will be no consequences for their actions or behaviors. It's almost like punching the smallest child in the room just because. Who's going to protect them? Who's going to care for them? Who's looking? That's what I felt this general manager was doing. But, you know, to be completely transparent, also, the place in which I worked had a bit of a, how would I say it? I'm trying to figure out the nice way to say this, right? They had a tendency to hire at-risk youth. And I don't use the term at-risk. That's what they would actually use, or the world would actually use, at-risk. Whether it be children from troubled homes, children from the local group home. But I didn't fit within that narrative. And one would think that they will hire people based upon goodwill, hire these kids, you know, based upon goodwill. And I would challenge that just a bit. I believe that they hired kids at that age from those type of environments for their long-term gain, thinking that in hiring these kids at this age that they would continue to work for this company for years, which seems good until you realize that you're not going to get paid much. It's a system of poverty. It's a system of cheap labor. But you hire them early and you keep them forever. And it's almost like a system of charity in which they always have the power over them. The power of, I hired you even though you were in a group home. I hired you even though you came from a broken home. You owe me. That owing mentality is especially dangerous. Within the workplace, to feel as if someone owes you something or you owe an organization something for them hiring you. I noticed this dynamic very early. And this also created a bit of conflict between myself and the general manager. Because I did not fit that narrative. Listen, I worked there for shoe money. I worked there for clothing. I worked there because I liked the chicken. I liked the tenders. I liked the pot pies. I liked the Sprite. I wasn't working there for my livelihood or for a career. I was working there for shoe money. I wasn't dependent upon their paycheck. I wasn't dependent upon them giving me hours. I had a set amount of hours I could do, which was in contrast to many of the peers that I work with who were 16, 17, 18, working 30, 40 hours a week, sometimes under the table, because they were looking for a career and I was just looking for shoe money. But all in all, you know what? To be fair, I worked there for 2.5 years and I enjoyed my job. I enjoyed my coworkers. Even though our career outlooks may have been different, that didn't matter to me. I enjoyed being around them. I enjoyed meeting new people from different walks of life. Being able to interact with managers who have been there for 15 to 20 years and picking up on their habits and seeing why they do what they do. A lot of them worked because it's the only job in town that they felt like they were skilled at. A lot of them worked because of their family. And I was able to observe that. What people will do, what people will put their bodies through, just so that their family has a roof over their heads, and food in the refrigerator and clothes on their back. I was able to observe that, and though it was not my reality, I took those lessons and remembered them. And it's these very people who I saw working hard for very little money, the strength that they showed and displayed, I would lean upon during the times in my life in which I was in that very position, working jobs, trying to make ends meet. I didn't judge them for working at a chicken place and being in their 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s. I learned at that job that people do what they have to do. While I was there, yes, for shoe money, for clothes money, for a bit of independence, there were other people who were there because they needed to be, because they had to be. And I respected that, which is a lesson upon itself. Like, respect people for where they are and for what they do. No matter their position, they're still a person. I believe in these very same things today. Whether you are the maintenance worker, the person who cleans the bathrooms, or the president of the company, I respect you. I respect you as a person because you are more than your position. Your position does not tell me who you are. The person does. Y'all, I've painted a pretty good narrative of this job. Like, everything seems cool, right? Wrong. Because I had run-ins with the general manager. I didn't fit his narrative. And every time he would come in to the restaurant, he had a bone to pick with me. Now, he was a jerk with a lot of people, pretty much everybody. But he had a little bit extra disdain for me. Whether it be his comments about my work performance, being 15 and a half, no mustache, nothing, or his assumptions about my background, or him cursing at me. Y'all, to this very day, I don't like it when people cuss at me, and it's due to him. Like, don't curse at me, because I will respond back. But y'all, he treated me like crap because I would not bend or break for him. I wouldn't. The will of a teenage black male would not break under his watchful eye. I told y'all in episode one that I went through an experience with a neighbor who I felt like took advantage of me and my work ethic and the amount in which he paid me. And the lessons from that I took and applied to this job in saying that you're not going to take advantage of me. You're not going to crush me. I'm not going to crumble under your ignorance, under your jerk behavior. Even when you call me out my name, I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of me going off on him, because that's what he wanted. He wanted a reason to use me as an example for the rest of the youth that were employed there. If he could get me to crack, if he can get me to bend my back, to compromise, or even to snap at him. If he can break down the strongest, the perceived strongest, then the rest of y'all have to fall in line. And y'all, even with all that, I didn't give him that satisfaction. Let me be completely honest, y'all. I wasn't a perfect worker. I was 15 and a half, 16, I believe I worked there 17, probably at like 17. I may have worked there a year and a half or 2 years, maybe. I wasn't a perfect worker. I was young. I was figuring out the workforce. It was my first job. that's no excuse, but really that's where I was. My first real opportunity to navigate the workspace, a space that I'm still in today. I didn't do anything that that my peers who were working there, that they didn't do. I'm sure, as a matter of fact, I know I was late a couple times. I know I was. I know I probably had that, you know, that teenage attitude or that selfish shortness of knowing everything. I'm sure I did. But it was nothing out of the ordinary. It was nothing that should have made me the example. The whipping boy. The one who received the most discipline in public ire. I believe about 2 years into the job, I heard I was going to get fired, and I quit. I talked to my parents about it. They weren't mad at it. I quit. I knew I was going to get fired. He was going to fire me. It became too much conflict, even for myself. And I didn't want to quit, but I knew I had to quit. Because his behavior was getting more and more out of control. He was nitpicking more and more. And I just didn't need it like that. I didn't need the job like that. I didn't need the stress like that. I needed to focus more on school. I didn't need to focus on how to deal with him. And so I quit. / they fired me. And I remember I submitted this almost as resignation letter as like a 17-year-old. Let's go 17, maybe 17, right? This resignation letter that was beautifully written, that was petty, that was vengeful, but done so within humor, in which I believe that I wish I would have kept a copy of this letter. I bequeathed my apron, my cooking tools, my words of wisdom to the staff around me that I worked with for those 1.5, 2 years. Essentially, I gave them a will that even though in my death at this place that I am still passing down jewels and nuggets for you all to reap years down the line. But I flew the coop. I made a conscious decision to fly the coop, to leave the job. Because it was too much for me. It wasn't worth it. Why am I telling you all this? About my chicken days and you know, the stories of what I went through and how I was treated and ultimately quitting. Am I telling y'all a quitting story? Yes. Sometimes you have to quit. Sometimes you have to tell yourself, this is not worth it. I am worth it. This experience is not worth it anymore for me, no matter what they're paying me. $50 back then was everything to me. It was extra money, it was shoe money, but it was my money. But I knew, like, this isn't worth it. So what did I do? I lined something else up and I quit. / got fired. But I quit before I got fired. But I lined it up. I planned my escape. It was time for me to fly the coop. It was time for me to go. This exercise of quitting or leaving is something that I've struggled with throughout my life because I'm not a quitter, I would like to say. I don't quit. I don't give people the satisfaction of pushing me out. I don't like that feeling of being pushed out. I'll leave on my own accord. I don't quit. But as I sit here as a 38-year-old and I reflect upon teenage Aaron at 15, 16, 17, quitting was my best option. I've worked in some jobs in which I should have left earlier. I've stuck it out in some jobs, y'all, like working while black. I've stuck it out in some tough jobs in which, yes, I had to do what I had to do. And I would go into one job and I would sit out in the parking lot and cry. I'm not even a person that cries. I was being treated horribly, on the brink of being fired, on the brink. I was the example. I saw the emails. I remember the treatment. I remember the discipline. I remember being pulled into the office and being chastised and being made an example of. And I left. I lined some opportunities up, some other job opportunities, and y'all know I believe in God. Like, I believe that God will open up some doors, some opportunities, but I think we also have to open up some doors, some opportunities too, by putting in the investment to finding new opportunity. God won't just open up doors just to open up doors. I mean, he can, but what work, what investment are you willing to put in? There were opportunities, y'all, where I had to get out and I stayed too long, where I should have left and I stayed too long. Quitting is not a bad thing. Sometimes it is the right thing to do. Sometimes you don't need to fight. Sometimes your fight is over. If you are a fighter like me, I am a fighter. Like, don't cross me. Because if you cross me, you're going to have a battle, and in the battle of wills, and whether I am a 15-year-old and I didn't let that man's will break me, or I'm a 38-year-old and I'm definitely not going to let you break me now. But due to my fight, I have a tendency to stay too long. Not for the work, not for the enjoyment, but out of my own selfish pride and not wanting to lose the fight. Y'all, it took me going into my late 30s within the last couple years to realize that it's okay to leave. That I don't have to stay for the fight. That sometimes the fight is over. Sometimes the bell rings. Sometimes I'm just fighting just to fight, and that's my pride, and I need to leave. Quitting does not mean that you're a quitter. Throwing in the towel does not mean that you're a quitter. Turning and leaving does not mean you're a quitter. You're only a quitter if you give up on yourself. I've worked at some jobs, some places. I have way over 20 years of work experience now. And I have yet to work a job that should have cost me. I've yet to work a job that should cost me my integrity, my peace. Like, it shouldn't take all that for me to work a job. And if it does on a continuous basis, it's probably time to go. Because you end up costing yourself peace, opportunity, mental health, physical health, spiritual health. You were on the line waging a war and fighting a battle that may not be for you to fight anymore. You know, you could be in a place to fight a battle, to create change, and then your time is up. And it's time for somebody else to come in that's a bit refreshed, that has a bit more energy, that may have a new vision, that may be able to take on the fight that you started or that you were a part of. I've felt throughout my work experience that sometimes I've approached work with a hard worker's mentality, in which my job should be hard, in which there should be a lot of stress and you know, some of the challenges that I faced with people, with systems, with being mistreated, with being stereotyped, with implicit biases, and you know, let me just be quite real about this. I've worked with some racist, people, some racist, and within racist systems. And I would take on this mentality of life, and perhaps work should be hard. Both should be hard. There's always a fight. Yes, there is always a fight. That is no lie. But what is a lie is that I had to be a part of every fight. Fighting too long does not advance the people. If anything, it wastes your time. I don't know who this podcast episode is for. Whoever it is, I hope that you see that you don't have to fight, that your work does not have to be hard, that there's another opportunity. Trust me, there's another opportunity out there for you. And maybe your fight is over. Maybe you fought the good fight. Maybe there's somebody else that should come in and fight your fight. Maybe you deserve to smile at your next job. Maybe. But you're tired. You're tired of fighting people. You're tired of fighting a system. Because ultimately, you're fighting yourself out of your next opportunity. I, at 15, flew the coop. I left the job. I did the right thing. It took me years to go back and be like, you know what? What I did was not cowardly. It was courageous. I wasn't a coward for quitting. I was courageous for leaving. And you are too. Instead of putting that energy toward the fight, take some of that energy and line up your next opportunity. Line up your next job. Line up your next business opportunity. Line up your next space and place for change. You fought the good fight. That is to be applauded. But now it's time for you to fly. And don't let them lie to you. Chickens do fly when they want to leave the coop bad enough. You've been cooped up for too long. Now is your time to spread your wings and get about there. Let someone take on the mantle of the fight that you were a part of. Every fighter needs a rest. And now may be the perfect opportunity for you to leave the ring, not as a chump because you quit or because you left, but as a champion because you made the choice to invest in yourself and in your future. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. And as always, be well.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. The journey is over.